Hello and welcome to Series 5, Episode 10 of Dad Educates Daughter on 80s Music. Hello, Rebecca.
Hello, Dad. How are we this week?
Well, as you know, I was at Rewind South this week. Obviously, it had been a couple of weeks ago when it comes out, but, well, this episode comes out, but yes, this weekend, I was at Rewind South both days. We do the weekend, not camping.
Yeah,
we live near enough to Henley to travel back and to again the next day. But we had a really great time. So for us, standouts. So yeah, I was about to say the standouts. So Saturday, Heather Small. I know she's 90s, and we won't speak about her. So, but if you want to look her up. She was with M People. Mm-hmm. She was lead singer. So M People were a bit like Clean Bandit, and they were going to have different singers. So right. Like Clean Bandit have had Jess Glynn and others.
Yes, yeah.
But they had Heather Small and just kind was of like stayed. Blown away and said, we need to have her permanent. And they did.
Oh, okay. So it so turned it was, into a group.
It was M People like with Heather Small sort of thing, but it was, I mean, or right. Featuring Heather Small, yeah. You know, that sort. But yeah, so Heather Small was the lead. So the songs that she sang were from M People.
Right.
But okay. She was standout. Obviously, Billy Ocean was the headliner. We have seen him before.
Oh, have
not
you?
As a I didn't know yeah, he's done it before. He actually, we were looking. I'm pretty sure it was one of the first, if not the very first one he was at. So yeah, he has been there before, but when we last saw him, he wasn't a headlined act. He was like, you know,
no, he's moved up in the world now
in the afternoon. But I mean, he deserved to be the headline.
He's got his age as well.
Yeah. And the good thing, I don't know if it was, he did it at North, but Heather Small came and sang with him.
No. So when, he was at North. We didn't have Heather Small.
Ah, you missed out.
I didn't have Heather Small. So when it's like you had Roland Gift on Sunday, we had him when I was there on the Saturday. But when he was there, because on the like the lineup it said Billy
with guests or something.
With guests. Yeah. We didn't have any guests. And I was waiting. I was like, who's he gonna bring out? Surely he's got to be someone.
Well, we were like that. Who's he gonna bring out?
We didn't have any.
And Heather Small, and she was brilliant. I mean, she was great all night. And then to bring her on with Billy Ocean was topped it.
And then anyone
out. For me, the better lineup was always on Sunday. I mean, I'm a big Nick Kershaw fan, and he never let us down.
Whereas I had him Saturday anyway, so I didn't miss out.
So yeah, he was the second to. He was the penultimate before the Jacksons, who were headlining. So yeah, he was good. Kim Wilde was good. I'll be honest, we've watched her before, and you know, she's never done a bad one, but never, you know, but yeah, she was really, really good, we thought. Jason Donovan, again, another one who, you know, he never does a bad one, but he's never likes that. But he actually sang Suddenly, which was the wedding song by Angry Anderson. Sang that. I wish I'd recorded it. I didn't. I was so.
Not.
Yeah, like, no, I wish moment. I had. And it was like, this is a great, you know, because it's not a song you hear a lot.
Yeah.
And if you're not a Neighbours fan, you probably, you know, you weren't into it. I mean, it did do it. But yeah, he sang that and it was brilliant. And again, like Nick Kershaw sang, obviously, I Am the One and Only.
Yeah.
You know, probably his biggest hit that he's written, not that he sang it. It was Chesney Hawkes.
It was, to make that known.
And I've always liked to find Young Cannibals. So, you know, Roland Giff was Roland always going to be, and we've seen him before, and he never lets you down.
Yeah.
Really, really good. And the Jacksons were phenomenal.
But do you know what? I'm jealous to the point that even if I did go both days, the North didn't have the Jacksons. So I'm jealous. That's why I said to you, I want videos, because I wouldn't have even had the opportunity to see them.
I think it's because... they were only in England for a short time, and I guess it just coincided with Rewind South, or whether that's why the reason they were over here, I don't know.
Yeah,
but they were, you know, they were. I wasn't. It's not my sort of, you know, disco music and all that. But I was, you know, impressed. It was like, wow, I'm glad I saw it.
Yeah.
It was good. Yeah, and not many people left before. You saw a few people leaving the cars going up the hill that you can see. Yeah. But most people, I would say, at least saw them or left midway through the Jacksons. At least I could say they've seen them, sort of thing. But no, very good. And there wasn't really any bad acts, if I'm honest. I wasn't totally impressed with Shack Attack, but they were there as the opening to get you up and going. So, you know, Tiffany, you know, was Tiffany. She only got really one song. It got everyone up.
Yeah.
But she did do, you know, when you hear people say, I'm going to cover, and they do that, and you think, oh, my God, don't.
Just don't.
She did Angels by Robbie Williams, and straight away it was like, oh my God, this is going to be a car crash.
No, she did it really
and it
well.
Was brilliant, yeah.
Wasn't it? She did that for us, and I was like, because Connor turned around to me and said, did she sing this? I was like, no, this is a cover. She's not sang this. And I was there, and both me and Connor were like, wow, that's a really good version. I completely forgot to mention that to you when we did mine a couple of weeks ago.
Well, I joked with Yvonne, and obviously we knew it's kind of, I did the same with Fine Young, with Roland Gift and Suspicious Minds. I went, isn't it weird? Robbie Williams covered Tiffany. And then I said the same when Roland Gift on Suspicious Minds. I mean, obviously they released that, but I was like, isn't it weird? Elvis Presley covered the Fine Young Cannibals. Because people that don't know, I mean, I don't, you didn't obviously see the doctor, and he's always great. He said, I need to introduce myself because the audience is getting younger and a lot of people don't know who I am. And he goes, I'm not, you know, when people say, who's he? Oh, he's the one who had that one hit with Spirit in the Sky. He goes, they then the youngsters then turn around and go, Christ, Gareth Gates has aged a lot. Which I did think was funny.
That was funny. That was funny.
So, yeah.
It is getting younger, though.
Yeah, we've noticed that.
Oh, I've only been twice, but it's
there's a lot of parents now taking their, I suppose, like your age with them now, because that's where we are, you know, they're in their 30s, you know.
Yeah, and it's a really good festival to go to. Like, Connor wants to go again. Connor wants the experience of going with you. But I think also because they're bringing some of the 90s in as well.
It's noticeable more and more. I mean, we had Boys Life, not my cup of tea, which is obviously
right up my
Ron McFadden and Keith, whatever his name is.
Keith Duffy.
Yes. Keith Duffy and Ron McFadden. So one of them from Westlife, one of them from Boyzone, and they've made
Boys Life.
They did say, why didn't they say, they did make a joke and said, people have asked us why we didn't call it Westzone. And they said, well, that's an airport wing at Belfast or somewhere, you know, the West Zone. So, yeah, that's why they said Boys Life. I'm sure
they were good.
The reason.
I really
I'm not saying they weren't, but it's just not my cup of tea.
But for me, Westlife were the first people that I ever saw in concert. Yeah. So I've got a lot of love for them.
Yeah.
So I really, as much as I don't like Brian McFadden, I enjoyed being able to listen to the songs.
Yeah. I mean, we've seen Heather Small before. I don't think
you didn't
she was part of the BEF, I think she was part of that, which is to do with Martin Ware, British Electronic Foundation or something like that. I think she was doing that. I don't think she had a sit on her own. So we've seen bits, but she's 90s and
yeah. And you know, we had coming. Gabrielle. Did you not have Gabrielle?
Yeah, we had Gabrielle, yes.
She's 90s.
Yes, another one. So, yeah, so they are slowly, because it used to be called Rewind 80s, now it's just called Rewind.
Right.
So I think they know that it's now.
Yeah, but I don't think that's so much of a bad thing, and it's not taken over. You have still got that very pure 80s feel to the whole thing. I don't think that will ever get taken from it.
No. But anyway, that was Rewind. Now back to the 80s.
Yes.
And a reminder of who you had this week. Donna Summer, Sade, Bonnie Tyler, Sam Brown, Evelyn Thomas and Nicole.
Yes.
So, how was it this week for your ears, and how many number ones do you think?
Different vibes this week compared to what I have had. Like, it's been a lot calmer, a lot more of a focus on vocals, very like in depth and very raw, I want to say. Like, some of it's been very chilled out, some of it's been just like, sometimes I can just sit there and go, wow, to a song. Like, it's been different. It's kind of made me realize you don't always need that upbeatness, and there are different sides to music, and you can still like it even if it's not got that oomph in it, kind of thing. And I've gone for four number ones.
Four number ones.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Who are you for?
Two from Donna Summer.
Okay.
That's No More Tears and I Feel Love. One from, how do you say her name? Because I've been saying just Sade.
Sade.
Right, yep, one from her, Smooth Operator.
You can call her Sadie if you want, but
okay.
Well, that's probably how I'd have said it if I didn't know.
Okay. And one from Bonnie Tyler, Holding Out for a Hero.
Okay. So, there were two number ones.
Oh. Also, a little piece by Nicole. I forgot that. It's right at the bottom.
Oh.
There's five.
Okay. Five numbers, and I'm saying it's two. Yeah,
and it's two. So I'm way off, but I might have the two. Yeah. Who knows?
You might. You might not. Okay. Let's talk music. Let's talk Donna Summer.
Mm-hmm. So I have gone with disco soul for her genre. She's very carbine and very different to what I've had. There's a few songs that have been covered, I think, unless they are covered. But usually if I know and recognise them as a cover, it's being covered by someone nearer my generation. I also like the difference, like Showing Me You Don't Need to Be Upbeat, like I said before. She really got me feeling that. And she's got a presence about her music that just transformed you to elsewhere. And I can't explain that in any other way. And I probably don't do her music justice by explaining it. She switches it up a bit further into her music, but it's not a crazy switch where you'd be like, oh, this isn't you. And she might, because she obviously then didn't get hits after, but it weren't awful. And I think it might just be the change in decade as well. Her vocals are very strong. She's not one for videos, so I didn't really have much to say on like her style or anything in that. Like, she didn't have any videos that were memorable or anything. I found that a lot with the women. They don't really need to, they've not had videos. Mm-hmm. Been a bit of a change there.
Okay. So, Donna Summer, born Donna Gaines, from Boston, Massachusetts. She's been active since 1968. She's a singer, songwriter. Her genres are disco, pop, R&B, dance, Euro disco, and high energy.
Oh, okay. And there's where you go with a bit of soul.
Yeah.
Kind of the opposite.
So Summer started out singing at 10 years old as part of the church choir, and then started performing in school musicals. In 1967, just before her graduation, she left Boston for New York City to join the blues rock band Crow. However, after they failed to sign a recording deal, the group dissolved, and Summer decided to stay in New York and audition for the musical Hair, where she landed the part of Sheila for the Munich production of the show, and so then moved to Germany in August 1968 after her parents reluctantly approved. She eventually became fluent in German, and sang various songs in German and released her first single as Donna Gaines on Polydor with a German version of Aquarius from the musical Hair. So she released a German edition of a song from Hair. In 1973, she married Austrian actor Helmuth Sommer, S-O-M-M-E-R, and gave birth to their daughter Natalie Sommer the same year. While working as a model and backing singer in Munich, Sommer met producer Giorgio Moroder, who we've obviously mentioned before, the godfather of disco. And obviously sang with Human League's Phil Oakey on Electric, Together in Electric Dreams. She met him and songwriter Pete Bellotti, however you want to say it, during a recording session at Musicland Studios. The trio then forged a working partnership and Donna signed to their Oasis label in 1974. A demo tape of Sommer's work with Moroder and Bellotti led to a deal with a European distribution label, Groovy Records. And due to an error on the record cover, Donna Sommer became Donna Sommer. So they put an O, a U instead of an O, and she stuck. And the name stuck. So it's not actually... So her stage name...
Talk about, because otherwise you'll constantly be going, no, it's Sommer, and people will be like, oh, Sommer. So I guess easy mistake, and you may as well just go with the flow. It's not big.
So that first album, Lady of the Night, became a big hit in Netherlands, Sweden, Belgium, and of course Germany.
And was that one that was recorded in German?
No. As far as I know, this is now English, but obviously she was known, obviously, already in Germany. It was a big hit, as in the album, in Netherlands, Sweden, Belgium, and Germany, on the strength of two songs, the title track and The Hostage. The Hostage even topped the charts in France, but was removed from German radio playlists due to the song's subject matter around a high-ranking politician that had recently been kidnapped and held for ransom.
Bit of controversy.
In 1975, Sommer passed on an idea for a song to Moroder, who was working at the time with another artist. The song would go on to be called Love to Love You Baby.
Right.
Sommer, Moroder and Bellotti wrote the song together, and together they worked on a demo version with Sommer singing the song. Moroder decided that Sommer's version should be released. It was sent to Neil Bogart, president of Casablanca Records. Bogart played the demo at one of his extravagant industry parties, and it was so popular the crowd insisted it got played over and over again. So it was literally on a loop.
That's one way to tell you've got a good song.
They'd never heard it, and obviously, like, it was wow. So Casablanca signed Sommer, and after getting the song promoted on radio stations and regularly played at clubs, by early 1976. And then it got regularly played in clubs and the single was released. Then by early 1976, Love to Love You Baby had reached number 2 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. It also caused controversy due to Sommer's moans and groans on the track. While the album of the same name sold over 1 million copies.
One way to sell it, everyone's gonna be like, yes, it's got that song on it.
Yeah. And obviously we know that from it's happened before, not necessarily selling great songs, but having the moans and groans. If you remember Fleetwood Mac, Big Love has got similar, and that was probably around the same time, probably a bit later actually, than this.
Yeah, because Fleetwood and Mac went earlier.
Well, they were late 70s, but they're obviously some of their better songs were
It came about a bit later.
Yeah. So Casablanca Records wasted no time in releasing Summer's third album, A Love Trilogy, featuring lead single Try Me, I Know We Can Make It. In 1977, Summer released her fifth studio album, a concept album called I Remember Yesterday, while the lead single, I Feel Love, reached number 6 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart and number 1 on the Billboard Dance chart.
Wow, so she's hit over there now, isn't she?
Yeah.
Majorly.
In 1979, Summer released her seventh studio album, Bad Girls, which saw the singles Hot Stuff and Bad Girls reach number 1 on the Billboard Hot 100, while the third single, Dim All the Lights, charted at number 2 on the Hot 100. Both Hot Stuff and Bad Girls also topped the Billboard Dance chart. So during the 1980s, Summer released 6 albums and had 4 top 10 songs on the Billboard Hot 100.
Do you know what's mad? Like, a lot of those songs that you've just said, I haven't got. So it's like she's hit over there and
is
like not releasing over here. But I mean, you would, wouldn't you? You'd just stay in America.
So 1980s, The Wanderer got to number 3. 1982s. So 1980, The Wanderer got to number 3. 1982's Love Is In Control, Finger on the Trigger, got to number 10. 1983's She Works Hard for the Money got to number 3. And 1989, This Time I Know It's for Real, got to number 7. That was to be her last US top 10 single.
I mean, but she's not done bad with them at all. Like, she's got a few number ones under her belt as well.
Yeah. So between 1974 and 2008, Summer released 17 studio albums and had 19 number ones on the Billboard Dance chart, giving her the title of Queen of Disco.
Hey.
So Donna Summer died in May 2012, aged 63, from lung cancer. Following her death, Soft Cell singer Mark Almond said Summer's collaboration with Giorgio Moroder changed the face of music. So as we already know, he's known as the godfather of disco. She was known as the queen of disco.
So they knew what they were doing, didn't they?
They were ahead. They're in a sense... They were at that time, when you think of other disco acts, the Bee Gees, Saturday Night Fever and all that, ABBA, you know, Dancing Queen, and obviously what came with that. And so Donna Summer was in with that, and I'm guessing she probably was just before them. So in a sense, possibly the pioneer of disco.
Yeah. Right time.
So Summer was the first artist to have 3 consecutive double albums reach number 1 on the Billboard Hot 200 album chart.
Do you know what's really mad? Like, the way you're talking, I'm like, mate, she's like up there, ain't she? She's good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I've never heard of her name.
Yeah.
The ones that probably haven't had got as much to talk about under their belt, and you know their name more. Weird, isn't it, how it all works?
Yeah. And obviously, I'll touch on it when we go through her discography, but I Feel Love, probably people know it more from Bronxy Beat's version than hers, or at least Bronxy Beat's version brought it into, like, myself,
like the limelight.
What I wasn't into disco or 70s. I was into Bronxy Beat, obviously Small Town Boy, and then suddenly they release I Feel Love as a double A, I think it was.
Mm.
So yeah, So yeah, so she had three consecutive number one albums on the Billboard Hot 200 album chart. Her 1980s hit, She Works Hard for the Money, became an anthem for women's rights.
Oh,
and there you go.
I mean, that's something to live for, isn't it?
So, Donna Summer. 1976, Love to Love You Baby, got to number four in the UK.
Oh, that's not bad. I said, oh, it's very sensual, isn't it? That's literally what I've written. And there's not actually much to it, really. But I recognised it, so I feel like it's probably been covered somewhere, or I just know her version but don't know her. But yeah, like, it was a good opener. There just weren't much to it as such.
Yeah. So again, this was in the medley that Bronski Beat done. They actually done it with Mark Almond.
Right.
So Bronski Beat, Jimmy Somerville, and Mark Almond. But it was a Bronski Beat record because it was a double A with Johnny Remember Me. But they did I Feel Love and Love to Love You Baby as a medley.
Okay.
So yes.
Would I have had that?
You would have, yes.
I wonder whether that's why I know them. I wonder whether that's why I know these songs.
More than likely that both of those were in that medley, and you'd have had definitely had that because it was. I'm pretty sure it was a double A or something like that, from what I remember. So yes.
Might go back.
Anyway, enough about Bronski Beat. Back to Donna Summer. So she got to number four. 1979. No More Tears. Enough Is Enough. This was with Barbara Streisand, and he got to number three.
That's not bad. That's good. At least I've guessed a number one and it's up there, not like number 35. I thought her and Barbara Streisand were a good duet. The only thing was, like, I didn't know who was singing at what time. So they're quite similar sounding in a way, but they do sing it really well together. It's a very calming song. It's a nice little sway to it.
Okay. 1980, On the Radio, number 32.
Oh, really? I enjoyed this one. It's got a disco beat to it. Again, I recognised it. It's got a good build-up, but it's not, like, in your face.
1982, Love Is In Control, Finger on the Trigger, number 18.
Okay, this is a bit more of a moving song. You get your foot tapping. It's still got that disco feel to it as well.
1982 again, State of Independence, number 14.
This one was the first one to sound remotely 80s. It's very to the point. Changes in a song. The only thing was, like, the vocals don't suit the music, like the way that she ended up singing it, like from the first chorus, I'd say, didn't then go with the music. I was a bit like, oh, could have had some work done on this, but it was very 80s, so I enjoyed that part of it.
Okay. 1982, I Feel Love, the Patrick Cowley remix edition, got to number 21.
Okay, I don't like remixes, but this was a good remix. Again, it's one I recognise, but I feel like I recognise the non-remix. I feel love. Her vocals are amazing in it as well. Okay.
So, in 1985, Bronski Beat released the I Feel Love medley with Mark Almond, and that got to number three.
Okay.
So let's remember, I Feel Love, the remix, got to number 21.
Mm-hmm.
I Feel Love, medley by Bronski Beat, got to number three. What?
They were 85.
Three years later.
Yeah.
So 1983, She Works Hard for the Money, number 25.
I do like this one. Very repetitive, and it's not much to it other than, like, a few lyrics repeated throughout. It's got good music in it, though, but, yeah, this one weren't for me.
Okay. 1983, Unconditional Love, number 14.
This was my favourite. This is very catchy. I feel like it's not just her and it's a bit of something different. Like the use of like session musicians or backing singers or whatever they were was very good. I really enjoyed that song.
Okay. 1987, Dinner with Gershwin, number 13.
Very catchy, very strong vocals, and it tells a story. Like I was like tuned into it the whole time, like listening to the lyrics.
Uh-huh. 1989, This Time I Know It's Real, number 3.
Again, I recognised it. She's gone back to her disco roots. It really gets you moving.
1989 still, I Don't Wanna Get Hurt, number 7.
Okay, so she's still getting the high ones. This is very heartfelt. It gives you the feelings. You kind of give your feelings to the song, like really hits you. It's a bit of a sing-along as well.
Okay. 1989, Love's About to Change My Heart, number 20.
This one was a bit like a ballad. I can't explain it. It was just very well sung, really shows off her vocals.
And then finally, in 1995... I Feel Love, the just original. A normal version, not yeah, the original version. That got to number 8. So still not as high, much better than the remix, not as high as Bronski Beat.
I just think it's a banger. I like the disco version. I might have to go listen to Bronski Beat's version, tell you what I prefer, but I feel like I might prefer the disco version. I do like a bit of disco.
So she had, what, 4 number ones on the Billboard Hot 100.
And not one.
All in the 70s,
mm-hmm.
But not one number one over here.
No.
There you
apparently
go.
Not. British didn't like her.
I know.
She's still got some good charting positions, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And she's still well known and... People like Jimmy Somerville and Mark Almond were obviously influenced by her when they bought out the music they bought out.
Yeah.
Which was like disco music, but electronic disco.
Mm. And sometimes I think that, like, it's not, yes, it is about chart positionings because you want your music to be put out there to get your music sold to then get higher and all of this. But I would be more touched knowing that someone was influenced by my music. So I think that in itself sells you a bit, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. Okay, moving on to Sade.
Very weird because it's spelled S-A-D-E. I just don't understand how they've decided that that's how it's going to be pronounced.
Well, that's how I pronounce it. I'll be wrong all these years.
But where are you getting the sh from?
I'm sure that's how it's pronounced.
Okay. I mean, I'll go with it. You know more. You're teaching me.
Well,
But all week I've been like, yeah, I'm listening to Sade. As if it's like Jade.
At least say Sadie.
Well, no, because I'm looking at it like if you put a J instead of an S, it's Jade. You don't say Jadie, do you?
Okay.
So I'm like, oh, it's Sade. Anyway, I've gone with Jazz. Which, not going to lie, if it is jazz, I'm very happy. I really enjoyed like the jazzy vibe. And if it's not jazz, God knows what vibe I was getting, but it was a good vibe. She's very smooth. She's just there with her music. She's nothing too extra. Someone you can really chill out to. I feel listening to it. Like, I feel like you need to listen to her music because I wouldn't be able to describe it well enough. It's just chill and jazzy and good. She's got quite a distinctive voice. She's very chill. And very casual, and I also think she's quite talented.
Okay.
Mr. Sade, or Shador, whatever she's called.
So, Sade, born Helen Felisade.
I'm sorry.
Adu.
Oh, right, okay. Helen
Felisade Adu.
I jumped the gun a bit, and as soon as I heard Helen, I was like, I'm sorry. But
from Ibadan, Nigeria. She's been active since 1982.
Okay.
She's a singer, songwriter, and her genres are soul, sophisticated pop, and smooth jazz.
Oh, okay. I was wondering how you're going to end that then, and I was jumping the gun again because I was like, how is this not jazz?
So there you go. So Sade, although born in Nigeria, she was raised in England from the age of four after the separation of her parents. Her dad, Abadizi, was Nigerian, and her mother, Anne, was English. And following the separation, her mother moved back to England with Sade and her elder brother and settled in Colchester, Essex.
Well, places.
She studied at St. Martin's School of Art in London and gained recognition as a fashion designer and part-time model before joining the band Pride in the early 1980s. She then formed the band Sade and secured a recording contract with Epic Records in 1983. A year later, the band released their debut album, Diamond Life, which took 6 weeks to record at the Power Plant studio in London. The record deal with Epic came about after Sade and Pride's guitarist saxophonist, Stuart Matthewman, started writing songs together and doing their own sets at Pride gigs, as in the group Pride, not the new Pride that we know now.
Right, okay.
So the band was called Pride, and then they've done their own stuff after.
They've gone and...
like, sort of, we're in it.
Like, done like a... yeah, yeah. And that was that her as a soloist she was doing that, or was she with her group as well?
As no, this was just her and the, I mean, pretty much the group Sade is Pride.
Right,
minus a couple of members, as I've explained. Right, okay. So Stuart Matthewman started writing songs together with her, and then they started playing their own sets, but at the Pride group's gigs, band's gigs, okay?
Right.
It was her solo performances of Smooth Operator, a song co-written with Ray St. John, a guitarist with Pride, which attracted record companies' attention. And so Sade and Matthewman quit Pride and formed Sade, along with keyboardist Andrew Hale, bassist Paul Denman, and drummer Paul Cook.
Dim Pride. So, I feel like they're digging everyone.
It's funny because the one who co-wrote Smooth Operator... he didn't go to Sade, even though he wrote one of their biggest songs.
Oh, yeah, I wrote that. I'm going to stick with you.
So Diamond Life reached number 2 on the album chart, selling over 1.2 million copies, and won the Brit Award for Best British Album in 1985. The album also reached number 1 in Austria, France, Germany, and Switzerland, while peaking at number 5 on the Billboard Hot 200 album chart in the US. The album's first single, Your Love is King, was released in February 1984 and was a huge success across Europe. And although follow-up single, When Am I Going to Make a Living, wasn't as successful, the third single, Smooth Operator, became Sade's first top 10 single in the US when peaking at number 5 on the Billboard Hot 100.
She's not doing bad, really, is she?
So the single, When Am I Going to Make a Living, had come about when Sade picked her clothes up from the laundrette and wrote on the back of the ticket, When Am I Going to Make a Living, after having no money left from paying for the cleaning, the laundry that she's just picked up. Literally, she had enough to pay for her laundry.
Oh, so that was like, so that's like based on a true story kind of thing.
Wrote, and am I going to have enough money sort of thing. So the album was written by all the band members, except Smooth Operator, which, as I've already said, was written exclusively by Sade and Ray St. John. The only non-member to receive writing credits on the album. The only member of Pride that didn't join the group or the band.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
So Diamond Life went on to sell over 10 million copies worldwide, becoming one of the top-selling debut albums of the 80s and the best-selling album by a British female vocalist. And it's a record that stood for 24 years.
Oh, so that's really made its imprint in the industry.
So, yeah. So we're talking, that was in, what, 1985? So we're almost talking, what, 2020 before that record? Yeah. Got surpassed. So we're talking probably someone like Adele?
Ed Sheeran?
Is he a female?
Sorry.
Best-selling album by a British female vocalist.
Yeah. It'll be Adele then.
It's got to be, hasn't it? I don't know. I'm just thinking who would have been around then.
There's no really other British...
No.
British female soloists. There aren't really many.
Yeah. So it just shows you that she's gone from the mid-80s. We've gone through
the whole 90s,
a whole decade.
And noughties.
And the noughties. Oh, no, so it'd been 2010.
Yeah,
it would
be 2010, wouldn't it?
Yeah, not 2020.
25 years. So I got to 2020 as well, Dad. So.
Yeah. So 2010, I still wouldn't know who that would be. Who would have been the biggest female vocalist for debut selling album. Best-selling album. So anyway, in late 1985, the band released their second album, Promise, which went on to be number one in both the UK and US album charts. The two singles released were Never As Good As The First Time and The Sweetest Taboo, both making the top 20 on the Billboard Hot 100 at number 20 and number 5, respectively. In 1986, the band received a Grammy Award for Best New Artist. Also in 1986, Sharda made her acting debut in Absolute Beginners, a film that grossed $1.8 million in the UK, and Sharda also sang on the film's soundtrack. Sharda's third studio album, Stronger Than Pride, was released in May 1988 and peaked at number 37 on the Billboard Hot 200, while in the UK it reached number 3 on the album chart. Lead single Paradise reached number 16 on the Billboard Hot 200. Sharda would release a further 3 albums, meaning a total of 6 studio albums between 1984 and 2010. So although Sharda is a group, Sharda was known. It's a bit like
us talking about
M People and Heather Small.
She as much as it's a group, it was known. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes. So, Sharda. 1984, Your Love Is King, got to number 6.
This was my favourite. Very swaying. I feel like I could hear it in the bar. Repetitive but smooth. It weren't annoying. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's probably my favourite too. 1984, When Am I Going to Make a Living, number 36.
Oh. See, this one, I just feel relaxed listening to it. I can sway to it. It's just there existing, but not even in a bad way. I can see why it's down there, but I wouldn't put it down there.
Okay. 1984, Smooth Operator, number 19.
Yeah, but this is a number one. That's mad. This has definitely been played in a bar. She's sold on jazz for me here. I just think it says what it is on the tin.
Mm-hmm.
It's very smooth. I did enjoy it. I did recognise it, so I think otherwise it is up there with my favourite.
1985, The Sweetest Taboo, number 31.
I agree. There's not as much content to this one. The music in it's good, though.
1988, Paradise, number 29.
So this one takes a minute to get into it, but the music is good on its own, which I don't say often, like, you know, if there's like a little bit of an instrumental. She adds a layer and it's kept very simple. It's not awful, but yeah, it's not up there.
1992, No Ordinary Love, number 26. It was then re-released in 1993, a year later, and it got to number 14.
Okay. I did enjoy this one. It was very passionate, very calming. It was a nice little end to her. Oh, no, it weren't end. It worked well, near end to her.
Yeah. And then 2000, By Your Side, got to number 17.
Okay, this shows off her vocals more, very stripped back, and it tells a story.
Okay, so that was Sade.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to Bonnie Tyler.
Mm-hmm. So I've heard of the name, but I didn't know what music she'd done, which is no shock for me really, but usually I can kind of name one maybe. But then when I had her, I was like, oh yeah, I do know her music, so I did know. She's got a very distinctive voice again. She can cover various like tempos or ranges, like she can go quite deep as well. She gives some bangers that you make, like, you want to sing your heart out to. She's not actually got that many songs, so it, you know, the songs will speak for themselves when I talk about them more than me talking about her. I've gone with country, rock, pop for her genres. And what I like about her, she doesn't stick to the stereotype of being a woman, which I think is probably a really hard thing to do in the 80s. Obviously, we have seen the Dad, what's it called when the people wear makeup? What was that?
New Romantics.
That's it. Like, we've seen all of that. But with her, when I say she doesn't stick to a stereotype, I mean, like, in some, like, the way she dresses in videos, you know, she's not. I think her, I've said a lot with the women, is it's like a sex sells in a way. Like, you do your Target, whereas Bonnie Tyler doesn't do that. And, like, you know, she'll wear a suit in her. Video. I quite liked that about her.
Okay. So, Bonnie Tyler, born Gaynor Hopkins. So, from Skewen, Neath in Wales. Active since 1969, and she's a singer. Rock, country, pop, pop rock and soft rock.
Okay.
Oh, hold on. So Hopkins, as I will call her to begin with, started out in show business in April 1969 when her aunt entered her into a local talent competition and she came second to an accordionist. I wonder what where that accordionist is now.
Yeah, not being spoken about on a podcast. Oh, dear.
So she inspired to pursue a career in singing. Or after that, so after that, I suppose it gave her the impetus to go and do to further that her career in that business, obviously. So yeah, so that inspired her to do well. Hopkins then found work as a backing singer for Bobby Wayne and the Dixies before forming her own band called Imagination. And it was around this time she changed her name to Shireen Davis. So she, for whatever reason, she changed her name.
But that's still not where we're at with Bonnie Tyler.
No. So she changed it to avoid being confused with the Welsh folk singer Mary Hopkin. So her name was Gaynor Hopkins, and she changed it to Shireen Davis so as people didn't get her muddled up with the folk singer Mary Hopkin. So, in 1975, Davis, as she's now called, was spotted singing with her band in Swansea by talent scout Roger Bell, who invited her to London to record a demo tape. Following many months, she received a phone call from RCA Records, and on offering Davis a recording contract, they also recommended she changed her name. Again, but they obviously didn't know she'd already changed it.
Yeah, they didn't know her real name was actually something.
But I guess Shireen Davis wasn't a sort of, you know, a name that they felt could.
I feel like that's not really a name that can sell albums either.
So, after compiling a list of surnames and first names for a newspaper, Davis found her stage name, Bonnie Tyler.
So
she literally wrote down loads of random names, first names, loads of random surnames, and looked at which ones went best together and come up with Bonnie Tyler.
Makes
so Ronnie Scott and Steve Wolf became her managers, songwriters, and producers. My Honeycomb was released as a debut single in April 1976, however it failed to impact any charts worldwide. RCA then sent 4,000 for a promotional push on second single Lost in France. Now 4,000 in the late 70s would have been a lot of, it's a lot of money now, but even more so then. So that charted inside the top 40 and saw Bonnie appear on Top of the Pops. Tyler's debut album, The World Starts Tonight, was then released in February 1977, and to promote the album, she supported Gene Pitney on his UK tour. However, the album failed to chart in the UK, but did reach number 2 in Sweden. She then released It's a Heartache, which became one of her most successful singles, peaking at number 3 on the Billboard Hot 100 chart. And to help her profile, she toured the US as Tom Jones's support act, who also was the big male singer from Wales. So why not have a female soloist also from Wales, who's just had a big hit in the American chart? Tyler's second album, Natural Force, which included It's a Heartache on its track listing, was released in May 1978 with sales of over 500,000 copies.
Wow.
Third studio album, Diamond Cut, was released in February 1979 and was a top 20 album in Finland, Norway and Sweden. However, in the US, it flopped at number 145. So it's still charted, but...
Still charted,
if
it's not as up there, is it? Yeah.
So 145 on the Billboard Hot 200. By now, RCA were focusing on reissuing Elvis Presley's back catalogue following the passing of his passing. And Bonnie Tyler felt RCA were pushing her to record more country-orientated music, which frustrated her, which I can understand why they wanted, obviously, to tap into that American market that she's already got into, and she's now so flipped with her album, which shows that the music she's taken
isn't
seen as commercial or not popular in America, so hence they were obviously wanting to push her, but it wasn't what she wanted. But it frustrated her, and following her RCA contract expired in 1981, after her fourth studio album, Goodbye to the Island, she signed with CBS Columbia Records. Columbia Records A&R man Muff Winwood asked Tyler to scout a new producer. So she considered the likes of Phil Collins, Genesis, Jeff Lynne, Electric Light Orchestra, and Alan Tarney. But Jim Steinman was her main choice, as Nyla was a huge fan of his records. Steinman initially declined, but agreed after Nyla sent demos of the rock material she was hoping to record. Knowing Steinman was more inspired being a member of Meatloaf. Her fifth studio album was recorded at the Power Station in New York with members of E Street Band, who obviously are to do with Bruce Springsteen.
Right, yeah.
Lead single, Total Eclipse of the Heart, was released in the UK in February 1983 and became one of the best-selling singles of all time with over 6 million copies sold. While her debut album debuted at number one on the UK album chart and number four on the US Billboard Hot 200, proving her move to rock was just as successful as possibly her move to country, if that was to be a success.
But you'll never know either, but at least she went with what she wanted to do rather than being told what to do. So... She's won either way, hasn't she?
So Tyler's commercial success led to several award nominations, including two Grammy nominations and a Brit Award nomination. Not that she won them, but she was nominated. Tyler also found success through soundtrack recordings in the mid-80s. In 1984, she released Holding Out for a Hero, which was to be on the Footloose soundtrack.
You can tell I am not an 80s child. So Holding Out for a Hero was on the Footloose soundtrack. It was also in Shrek.
Oh, was it?
Which is what I have written.
Okay.
I was like, was used in Shrek. Not probably what it's known for. But...
just to let you know, Bonnie Tyler I've seen.
Oh, okay.
So she, funny enough, was at Rewind the very first year we went.
Really?
So 2014, 10 years. This was our 10th, not our 10th year of going, but it was our 10th anniversary of going.
Yeah.
2014 was the first year we went. We only went on the Sunday. And Bonnie Tyler was one of the main acts on that Sunday. And there was loads of men with the Bonnie Tyler wigs and the leopard skin dresses on. Yes. She's got a following, as I found out.
Got a following, yeah.
So yeah.
What's she like live? What's she like now?
Yeah, she was okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So 1976, Lost in France, got to number 9 in the UK.
Why are we starting with Lost in? Oh, you added that. Okay.
I added that, sorry, yes.
Yes.
I didn't put it on originally because of when it was, and it you know. No, I went with It's a Heartache and as a biggest single outside the 80s, but I added that because it was her first single.
I was like looking at my list and I was like, he's not said the others. Yeah. Lost in France, simple singing. It really suits her. That was really good for her, I think.
1977, It's a Heartache, number 4.
Oh, that's a high one. Very passionate. I feel like it's like a sit down and just think about life and you've probably had a breakup song. But it does the job. Gives you feelings.
1983, Total Eclipse of the Heart. Number 1.
Okay. I nearly put this as a number one, you know, and I didn't. This is my favourite, though, and I know I don't usually do favourites that I know, but this is just a beautiful song. It's a classic, slow dance into it, you can sing your heart out. It's just lovely, so yeah, it deserves that number one.
1984, A Rocking Good Way with Shaking Stevens. It's actually Shaking Stevens' song, and obviously...
I've heard this before.
Yeah, it was his song and he done it with her, but he wrote it And I suppose he just tapped into seeing that Bonnie Tyler's just had a number one with Totally Eclipse of the Heart. She's, you know, the new big thing, and he
let's get in clubbed, on that.
You know, it got to number five, so you know, fair enough.
I'm not a fan of this one. It's got that talking, singing. It is a bit country, though, so I did enjoy that part of it. But yeah, I'm not a fan. Probably would have said that back when we were talking about Jake and Stevens. I have listened to it because I did. I was like, that's why I've heard this. So yeah, probably have said the same thing.
And in 1984, Holding Out for a Hero got to number 96.
However,
it was then included on the Footloose soundtrack, re-released in 1985, and got to number 2.
Wow, okay.
So what a difference a film can do.
Mad, isn't it? And I've put, it's a cracker. It's catchy, it's sing-along, and it was used in Shrek.
Yeah.
Probably not what people think of when they think of it, and normal people, or older people would go to Footloose. Whereas me, the animated film of Shrek.
Okay. Moving on to Sam Brown.
Yes. I went for her to be a bit of jazz as well, you know. Maybe a bit of soul. Her songs have different feels to them. You've definitely got to listen to them. As again, I can't explain them, but they do really suit her. There's not much to say because there's only three. I didn't listen to any more. I thought three was enough, and I didn't actually listen to any extras this week. I'm quite disappointed in myself. But yeah, there's not much to say about her without giving away what I think of like the songs and everything. I just think she really suits her genre and just really suits what she does. She knows what she's doing, and yeah, she's got it. Even though she only had three, she knows what she's doing, I think.
Okay. So Sam Brown from Stratford, London, active since 1978. She's a singer, songwriter, and musician. So she plays the guitar, the bass, keyboards, and a ukulele, as well as being a pianist. I can never say that. Pianist.
Yay!
And her genres are blue-eyed soul, jazz, pop, and soft rock.
Okay, yeah.
So she is the daughter of the musician Joe Brown and session singer Vicky Brown. So she was born into a musical family. Sam came to prominence in the late 1980s. As a solo artist, following many years as a backing singer. So bear in mind, she's been active since 1978. Wasn't till the late 80s she got noticed as a solo artist.
She's been active since then, and she's been a backing singer. She's not really been out there, is she? She's probably been trying to get
her. I'm about to say what she was the backing singer for, or who for. George Harrison, only one of the members of the Beatles.
Yeah, I was like, I know Small that name.
Faces, whose lead singer was Rod Stewart.
Nah.
Spandau Ballet. Adam
Ant. She's not the big one.
Pink Floyd and Pink Floyd, Dave Gilmour, who was also a member of Pink Floyd, and The Firm. But as I say, so she was used as obviously seen as a great backing singer. No one ever thought about promoting her as a soloist.
But then I wonder how much effort she put into wanting to be a soloist.
Well, that's the other thing, yeah. I mean, if you're comfortable doing the backing and you're making okay money, then...
I was going to say, like, she was obviously getting a bit of work working for all of those. So it depends how much she believed in herself or how much she wanted it. We don't really know that, do we? Like, she could have been posting out those demos and she could have been getting backlash from them, or she could have been like, no, I'm happy, and then bam, one day became a soloist. I don't know.
So in 1988, Brown released her debut album, Stop, and it reached number 4 on the UK album chart, And reached the top 10 in Austria, number 2. Netherlands, also number 4. New Zealand, again, number 4. And Switzerland, number 6. While the league single one title track, Stop, reached number 1 in Belgium, Iceland, Netherlands and Norway. And was also a top 5 hit in Australia, number 4. Austria, number 3. Finland, number 2. France, number 2. Ireland, number 4, and Switzerland, number 5. A follow-up single, a cover of Can I Get a Witness, which originally was a hit for Marvin Gaye.
Ooh.
Brown's second studio album, April Moon, was released in April 1990 and didn't chart as well as her first album, with the best position being number 11 in Finland. While lead single, Kissing Gate, flopped and only made the top 40 in the UK. Brown released a further 5 albums, with her latest album being number 8, which was released in 2023. However, sales have never repeated the success of the late 80s. So, Dan Brown, 1988, Stop, got to number 4 on the UK chart.
This was my favourite. I feel like I recognise it might have been covered. It slowly builds up. I really like the classical music in it. Like, I feel like they use like orchestra, like, you know, like a violin, a cello, those type of instruments. And I also think it's been in Bridget Jones, which might be why I recognised it.
Okay. 1989, Can I Get a Witness, number 15.
Okay. Upbeat, fast-paced, it gets you moving.
1990, Kissing Gate, number 23.
Oh, I liked this one. This was sing-along, very passionate. It was a good little end to her. And like I say, like, she was very, you know, solid with what she was singing and the way she was singing. You know, it weren't, usually I get 3 and it's like, oh, am I coming or going? But she was just straight in, knew what she was doing, done it. But yeah, it's a bit sad that she didn't have more.
Okay. Evelyn Thomas.
Not many songs. She brought the music for sure, though. I feel like she's probably been around for a while, because she looked a bit older. She knows what she's doing. And I've gone for disco, pop, soul.
Okay. So Evelyn Thomas, born Ellen Lucille Thomas.
Why are they just whipping off their names this week?
She's from Chicago, Illinois, in the US. Active since 1976. She's a singer. And her genre is high energy and disco. So very much like Donna Summer.
Yeah.
So Thomas came to prominence during the 80s after being discovered by British producer Ian Levine, who was in the US in 1975, scouting for gospel and soul singers that he could promote in the UK. So right. Thomas and Levine recorded several tracks, which resulted in a contract with 20th Century Records. Thomas scored a chart hit with her debut single, Weak Spot, which was co-written with Levine, although other singles were released like Doomsday. No other single broke into the top 40. So although she released other singles, as I say, like Doomsday, which was her other one, no other single made it into the top 40. So Thomas then signed a deal with Casablanca Records, who we spoke about earlier, for her debut album release, I Want to Make It On My Own, which was released in 1978. However, Casablanca did very little to promote the album, so Thomas switched to AVI Records for the release of the AA single Have a Little Faith in Me and No Time to Turn Around, which prompted the record company to release an album, Have a Little Faith in Me. By 1984, Levine had re-established himself as a record producer and asked Thomas to come to London to record a new track. The single was High Energy and was released a couple of weeks after Levine had contacted Thomas. The single reached number one in Germany and is Thomas's only Billboard Hot 100 chart when reaching number 85.
Wow.
Thomas died in July 2024. So recently, if you think about it.
Very recently.
At the age of 70, with Ian Levine breaking the news.
He is not old as I thought she was.
So with Ian Levine breaking the news on his social media platforms. So very recent that she died.
Very recent.
So 1976, Weak Spot, got to number 26.
This was good energy, disco, fast, gets your head bopping, and some good vocals.
1984, High Energy, got to number 5.
That was my favourite out of the two. It gets you moving, and it is what it says, high energy.
Okay. Moving on to Nicole.
Yes, I only had one from her. And like I said, I didn't get around to listen to any of her, so I'm a bit disappointed. I don't like when I don't listen to more, just because I do like to give myself that little bit more of an insight. But when I watched the video for the song that you've given me, it said about a little competition. So I feel like she is a literal one-hit wonder. But so as much as I didn't seek out any more, I feel like I probably wouldn't have found much more on her. And God knows what genre she is. God knows. Wait.
So Nicole, who is Nicole Seibert or Nee Holock.
Right.
She's from Saarbrücken in Saarland, Germany. Active since 1980. She's a singer. Her genres are pop, jazz, rock, and gospel. It's a very different.
She must have other music out there then for it to be.
I'll come to that. So Nicole began performing at the age of 4, but did not achieve commercial success until she was 16, when her first single was released, peaking at number 2 in Austria. Obviously, this single was in German.
Yeah.
In 1982, at 17, she won the Eurovision Song Contest. The single reached number 1 in multiple European countries. And following the contest, Nicole recorded the track in English, French, and Dutch, as well as being obviously in native German.
Blooming heck, she's a talented woman there, isn't she?
In an interview years later, she made a statement around her points received from Israel, saying, bearing in mind the World War, Germany and the Jews. So the most important victory was that a German girl gets 12 points from Israel with a song about peace. She also stated how she got an invite from the Israeli government at the time to go to Tel Aviv and sing to the soldiers stationed there. An invite she accepted. She has released 2 studio albums since, one in German and one in English. And she is now an activist supporting many humanitarian causes like child abuse and homelessness.
Yeah, I could see that.
So the reason we didn't really, obviously one, it was on the back. She made her name on the back of Eurovision.
Yeah.
And obviously the only reason that her single probably got translated was because of the success through Eurovision. And it was after. Mm. So obviously people wanted to hear it, but obviously in English and the same in French and Dutch. So she re-recorded it in their language, or in our language as it is. But obviously, any other consequent releases by her was in German. And that's why we only had one single. And that was 1982, A Little Piece, as it was called or translated. Yeah. And it did get to a number one.
Yeah, I thought correct? So. But that's only because when I watched the video, it did give it away that it was a Eurovision winner. Hence, when I was talking, I was like, it was to do with a little competition because they didn't want to give that away and let you say your piece. But as soon as I saw that, I was like, surely for me to have her, she's a Eurovision winner. I mean, I knew she weren't English because the first part of the song is still not in English. And I was like, God knows what she's saying. And then it does go to English. And she is talented. She's a musician. It does have a good beat, you know. It weren't awful, but I was like, she's a one-hit wonder for sure. So I didn't think I would find much else. And obviously with the first bit of the song being in a different language, I was like, she's not British. So I don't know what else I would even find anyway.
So. Okay.
So it was an all right end of the week.
Okay. Well, before I give you next week's, let's see how we influenced you this week. Did or didn't. Hit or miss. Donna Summer.
You might be shocked with this one, but I've gone for a miss.
A miss with Donna Summer?
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. I just think her songs, she's got some good ones, and but I'm just like, there's nothing amazing about her. Like, I wouldn't
let
really
me just
choose.
Put into context what you've just said,
because
last week Shannon got the thumbs up. Last week. The week before. Pat Benatar got the thumbs up.
I did like Pat Benatar, though.
The week before that. Suzanne Vega or Mika Paris, whichever you want to go with, both got the thumbs up. Episode 6. Taylor Dane got the thumbs up. Episode 5, just to recall everyone, Kate Bush, Donna Summer's in good company. Kate Bush also got the thumbs
Kate
down.
Bush is awful.
While Pebbles got the thumbs up. Episode 4. Nina Simone got the thumbs up.
Yeah, she's a legend.
Kathy Dennis didn't. Episode 3, Denise LaSalle got the thumbs up with My Toot Toot, her only single.
That was a good song, you know. Come on.
Lisa Stansfield got the thumbs down. Episode 2, Kim Wilde got the thumbs down, probably the biggest selling soloist in England.
Yeah, and I will say, even though I've seen her live, I still don't think much of her. She did a good live set, but meh.
Okay. While the likes of Sonia, Tiffany, and Tracy Chapman got the thumbs up.
Yeah. Yeah. What's wrong with that? I stand by.
I'm just putting it in context here. That's all. In episode 1, 99 Red Balloons by Nina got the thumbs down, but Japanese Boy by Anika got the thumbs
up. That was a good one, to be fair. You don't always agree with my opinions, right? Hey, I'm going to put it out there. You put Donna Summer out there now, people are going to be like, there's just nothing much to her. Like, yeah, she makes me realise, like, I don't always, like, your music doesn't always have to upbeat. Yeah, she has got some good songs, but to be fair, the only ones that I'm like, yeah, this is, like, quite a good one, are the ones that I've recognised. So ones that have been probably covered or had a remix. Like, ones that have been pushed a bit more. But then listening to her others, it's like, Eh. Nothing too special about her, is there? Don't be so offended.
Okay. I'm not because I've influenced you to like these other people I've just mentioned. It's just surprising how some of the people
I don't always like the people
overlooked, like Donna Summer, Kate Bush, Lisa Stansfield. Overlooked. You know,
Kate Bush is a load of wallop. I stand by that.
There are so many people.
I've not overlooked them.
The two people that listen to this podcast agree. Are probably at the moment both going, "What the is she saying?"
Definitely more than two people, Dad.
Come Any on. Anyway.
This faith.
Anyway, Sade. Moving on Sade. To Sade. Sadie.
Sade. Is a hit.
Hey.
I really enjoyed her.
Good. Bonnie Tyler.
Another hit.
Hey, yeah, that's good. Yeah. We'd have had a lot of people in Wales switching off for the rest of the episode or the rest of the series.
No, I did really like her, and I would seek out more songs from her as well because I didn't actually have that many.
Okay, Sam Brown.
Again, I really enjoyed Sam Brown. Like, that's why I said like, I feel like there should be more than three songs. I think I really like jazz. Yeah. Because I feel like every time we've had a jazz, I'm like, I like. Evelyn Thomas.
Or Evelyn. Depending on how you want to say it.
Yeah. Again, really enjoyed. She was a hit. Again, I will. Like, this is why I said to you, I'm annoyed that I didn't seek out more songs to give me more of a background. But obviously, it's what you give me that influences me more than anything. But Evelyn makes me want to look for more songs.
Okay.
And then Nicole was a miss. I don't want to look for more, but like I said, like with her not being British, I wouldn't understand.
I was going to say, you can look for more. They're probably in German.
Yeah.
So, okay. So, are you ready for next week's?
Always.
Always. Okay. Let's see how many of these you know. Gloria Estevan.
You've mentioned that name before, I think. I'm not sure, but that name sounds like something I know.
Enya.
Kenya?
Enya.
Oh, Enya. Yeah, I recognise that. You've mentioned her or something.
Okay.
Maybe she didn't Ola mind.
Abdul.
Yes, she was married to someone. That I've heard. Oh, he was. I don't know. I know, I've heard of her.
Debbie Harry.
No.
Denise Williams.
No.
Sabrina.
No.
Okay. So, next week, Gloria Estevan, Enya, Paula Abdul, Debbie Harry, Denise Williams, and Sabrina will be the songs of the artists whose songs you will be listening to.
Okay, I look forward to that because what I've liked about these recent weeks is I am very much like, no, I don't really know who they are. Mm. So that I don't go in with any like knowledge or standards or expectations. I just go in. And that's what I do like about, like, I prefer being blind to it and just listening to the music.
Okay. You know what I mean? All right. On that note, after a good week, but a big surprise, big shock with
right, no... It's not the first time, is it?
No, no, it's not. You're right. As I said, Kate Bush, Lisa Stansfield, to name two. A big shock, but a good week. And we will say goodbye and
see what shockers I have for next week.
What you have for next week, yeah. Yeah. You've already had one shot in that you didn't know someone, but that will come to light next week.
All right, okay.
That will come tonight.
Okay.
So, I shall leave that there.
Yeah.
And say goodnight.
All right, I'll say goodbye, Dad.
See you.
Bye.